Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey. When John Chayka was hired at the age of 26 to be the general manager of the Arizona Coyotes, he became the youngest GM in all of professional sports. He has a gifted mind, and he is building a sustainable product in more ways than one out in the desert in Arizona. And we are so pleased to have him here on the podcast. John, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Honor.
And you're probably the first GM that we've had on that's really of the podcast generation. That most of the gentlemen we've done, it was their first time. This is probably not your first time doing a podcast.
Yeah, I've done a few. Also a big consumer of the podcast. So I really enjoy them, and it's fun. It's always fun to be a part of.
All right. Well, we're glad you're doing this. So you're still 20-something, right? You turned 30 in June?
Yeah, it's coming up, the big 3-0, but still 29.
The big 3-0. How often do people ask you about your age?
Yeah, pretty consistently, I'd say. More so when I was first getting on the job. Now it's more about the team and the trades we've made and things like that. But initially, that was the main topic of conversation.
So how often do you still walk in arenas and people are looking for your credential? Home or away?
You know, I think more people recognize me now, I guess. So I guess that helps. But whether I'm scouting on the road or in Europe or something like that, yeah, always looking for credentials. So it's funny.
Some might see you looking so young though and think you're a player too.
Yeah, I get that a couple times. Yeah, I get that with a lot of the autograph guys too, coming out of a hotel. They want me to sign different things and like, hey guys, you don't want this autograph. That's you're looking for the players, not me.
So here you are in the midst of all these other general managers, and I'm curious. The beginning of it for you, when you first started making deals, having interaction with some of the elder statesmen like Lou Lamoriello or Jim Rutherford, I think there's probably two ways to look at it. Either, you know, was there any concern on your part that, well, you're the new kid on the block and they might try to take advantage of you, or you were armed with so much information, maybe you could take advantage of them?
You know, like, I think first off, those people you mentioned and the majority of the guys, if not all of them, are really good people. So, that's really helpful in terms of making relationships and building connections. And that's how business is done. It doesn't matter what your age is or, you know, what business you're in. You know, you have to have a relationship and have a connection. And I think the main connection for us has always been just a passion for hockey. So, again, you know, age is irrelevant in that sense. We're always discussing the game, discussing your games, your team, what you're trying to do, how you're trying to build your team. Anytime you're trying to make a trade, you're really trying to find that intersection between one team's needs and another team's needs. So, for me, that was always a discussion point of what they're looking to do, what we have on our roster, what we're looking to do, and how there's maybe an opportunity to help each other out. So in that sense, it's been really good. And a lot of those guys you mentioned, Doug Wilson, those guys have been really helpful. Kenny Holland, just in terms of the calendar and how things go from that standpoint, or meeting with the group. So, I enjoyed it. It's been a fun experience the whole way. And I think I'm focused on trying to build the Arizona Coyotes, and that's what I'm trying to do. And if there's an opportunity externally to add to our group or make a move, then I look to do that with those guys. But, I enjoy those relationships.
Where did the passion start for you?
I think it's just like any kind of Canadian hockey story in the backyard. And my dad built a rink for me. So just out there practicing the game, working the game, learning the game, playing shinny hockey and just enjoying it. So, those are always the memories that I remember, and that's kind of where the passion lies. And, now I can watch 5, 6, 7 games a day, and it's not really work, So I think, that kind of led me to building businesses in hockey and being involved in hockey. And, the game's given me so much, and it's been such an enjoyable experience. It's been a lot of fun.
If you were a scout, what would you have said about yourself as a player?
It's amazing how biased we are by our own experiences. And, I was, tall, lanky centerman, liked to make a lot of plays. So, I think just the way the game's played now, pace of play, you have to make decisions quick, funnel pucks to the net. Those were things that I was the best at, but I was able to read the play well, be a kind of cerebral player and make plays. And that's what I enjoy, watching the game and scouting players myself. But I also now appreciate the other elements of the game in terms of getting to the net and scoring some of those gritty goals. And that'd probably be, an area I was lacking in.
So an injury derailed your professional hockey hopes?
Yeah. I mean, maybe a combination of injury and lack of performance, but Both for sure.
At 19, you started your first business, right, with your sister?
Yeah.
I mean, what were you doing to be able to start a business at 19? I mean, something had to come even before that.
Yeah, I come from an entrepreneurial family, so always involved in businesses and doing, you know, little things on the side. You know, my father, he was a serial entrepreneur, and what that means is he had a lot of successes, but a lot of failures as well, and that's part of being an entrepreneur. And you know, the key of that is obviously making sure your successes are greater than your failures and coming out on top in that sense. And but you learn a lot. I remember as a kid, you know, watching my father go through some of those failed businesses and some of those successes, and you know, seeing what were the commonalities between the successes and what he learned through the failures, and I learned with them. So you know, for me, that was a big part of my start. And you know, I think being an entrepreneur is a certain mindset. You know, it's a value-based mindset, and one that, you know, there's a certain level of risk tolerance. But again, being able to manage that risk so that you're not, you know, putting yourself in a position where, you know, you're jeopardizing your future, but also putting yourself in a position where, you know, there's asymmetric risk and your you know, successes again trump your failures. So, you know, just that experience and that knowledge and going through those trials and tribulations, I guess, as a family, you know, kind of really gave me some understanding of how to run a business at a young age.
I hear the analysis in your brain already, just even when you look at what your dad was doing and successes and failures, analyzing what were the commonalities between them.
Yeah.
Did you always have that kind of mind? Were you always analyzing?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I like to listen a lot. I think that's one of my greatest strengths, but you know, I really like to, you know, observe and analyze and collect as much information as possible. And, you know, it's one of the parts of life I enjoy. So anytime I get in a room with some smart people, I enjoy, look, I'll contribute to the conversation. If I'm asked my opinion, I'm more than happy to give it. But I also just enjoy, you know, learning and consider myself kind of a lifelong learner. And, you know, even as I'm a part of a National Hockey League team now, podcasts and you know, take some courses through the summers and do some things to continue to learn and grow. And I think that's yeah, it's a big part of it. I still, you know, view myself as obviously relatively young, and the ability to continue to consume and enjoy learning new experiences. So that's what I'm after.
What's the best idea your dad ever had, or the best business he ever ran?
Actually, it was, you know, some of these industries are fairly nuanced or specialized, but probably his greatest economics success was a facilities management software product. So Selling to schools and facility management. But it was amazing to me to watch, you know, some of the best product ideas, so to speak, or weren't the best business, most successful businesses, and vice versa. Again, some of these, you know, detailed businesses, ideas with that are in the minutiae, They actually created the most value. So I always found that interesting, right? It's like, not the best product doesn't always make the best business, I guess, is the takeaway. And everyone kind of knows that, but to kind of go through it and see it firsthand it was interesting as a young kid.
Yeah, that is interesting. So at 19, you started Stathletes?
Yeah, I started National Hockey Institute, which is a training institute for young players. And that's kind of how Stathletes was born out of, just being in that day in, day out environment, development environment, and you know, trying to provide value for these players and really understand what's driving value and how to create value and what they're working on. You know, I think it was a number of years ago where, you know, the concept of combining on ice and off ice training and really being specific in your training and regimen was you know, just starting to begin, and you know, just applying data to that concept was how Stathletes was started.
Are you still doing it? How did it progress?
Yeah, I mean, it's really grown into a much larger business. Again, it was born out of a passion for hockey and my love for working with players and then, you know, consulting with teams on an individual basis. And you know, now it's grown to be a large data collection company that is involved in, you know, not only hockey, but a few different sports. So, you know, as part of my agreement to come with the Coyotes, I sold off my stake in Stathletes, and it's just really taken on a life of its own. It's grown to be much larger, and, you know, part of being founder was, you know, my love for, it was my baby, and you know, it got to a point where in some ways I was holding it back in terms of growth. And at some point, you know, a company outgrows its founder. And I felt that was a part of it. So Yeah, my sister's still involved. She does some work for Stathletes, but it's such a large business now with so many different people involved in different ways that it's a much different company today than it was when I left it.
Now, I'd have to say I'm a little surprised just in doing some reading about you that I would have thought you came from a total business background, which you obviously have some business background, but it was really, you had this passion for hockey and you felt like you needed to go to business school to really engage more on that side. So what did you learn in business school? And I was laughing because, you know, and I'm thinking Ivy League, like being in the States, I said, he's an Ivy League grad, but the Ivy business school you went to seems just as impressive.
Yeah, it's quite the education, I guess. I saw him running businesses and getting involved in some, you know, quantitative analysis. You know, have a love for math and involved in math, but never really had the formal education at the highest level. So, you know, did some research and went to Western and Ivy, and the interesting part about that education, the Ivy education in Canada, there is that it kind of mirrors the Harvard case-based method of learning. And for me, that was the most valuable experience. I just think, you know, going through, complex business problems and trying to find simple solutions and being able to articulate those solutions in a group environment was, a really invaluable experience for me. And you're, in a group with 60 to 80 of the best and the brightest that Canada has to offer, like really the world. And, so it was... It was something where I was able to sharpen my quantitative skills, some of those technical skills. They had to do a phenomenal job of that, but also some of those softer skills and leadership skills, and there's a large focus on that as well. So, I wouldn't trade those years for anything, and certainly, owe a large part of where I am today to that school.
So give us an example. You're at work in season of some of those case-based studies that you studied, how they come to life on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think the key takeaway with that type of education is really that you can't just view things in isolation. So if you're in marketing or if you're in operations or you're in decision making with analytics, it's not just that piece of the puzzle. It's looking at the world holistically, and really understanding the dynamics of a decision that you make and what are the implications of that decision and how does it affect the other parts of a business or the industry. And, so for instance, if you're making a decision on drafting a player, you have your scouting analysis, you have your game reports, you have these people that have gone through and, done a lot of work. And that's certainly a large part of that decision-making process. But, and on top of that, you have your physical data, you have your performance data, you've done a lot of work with psychoanalysis and understanding, what drives this person and what are their qualities and how does that fit with your team. You're considering your coaching staff and your tactics. And again, each one of these things in isolation, if you just view it on its own, it's probably going to get you the wrong decision. But kind of looking at things harmoniously and understanding how they interact with one another. Again, there's no formula for that, but as a good decision maker, as a leader of an organization, giving each piece and each department a say in that decision, decision-making process is really kind of the key takeaway I had from Ivy.
So you're not just a numbers guy, an analytics guy, because you also played and have such a feel for the game. Does the eye test for you with a player usually match up with the numbers?
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't?
Sometimes they don't, yeah. And I think that's really where the value comes in. I think I love going to watch games. It's part of the job I enjoy probably more than anything. I go to Europe, I go to Russia, I go to, the prospects games and the big tournaments, of course, and I'll get out, stay a few extra days if we're out on the West Coast or, Western Canada, things like that. But ultimately, I think, you're trying to create a hypothesis of what you, feel, what's your intuition on a player. And then, as you're making these decisions, they're such large decisions, they're multi-million dollar decisions, you want to have this robust decision-making process to make sure that you're eliminating as much of the error as possible. And so again, whether that's, other people's views besides my own, whether that's quantitative data from, the on-ice performance, whether that's quantitative data in terms of the physical capacity to develop and get better and learn. Those are all things that are really important to that overall decision. And look, if it's drafting or if it's making a trade or if it's free agency, there's a lot of uncertainty and risk in these decisions as well. And I don't think people adequately understand that. You know, these aren't easy decisions. They're not black and white. So anytime you get more information, the better. But really where you can learn a lot and where I've been able to learn a lot is when there is some disagreement. And then instead of just, you know, leaving it at the disagreement, really digging in and understanding why and understanding, you know, how can we apply this in the future to continue to get better as an organization? And I just think, you know, where we are today is so much better than where we were 12 months ago. And I know 12 months from now, we're going to be operating at an even higher level because of that process and that approach.
So how did an academic like yourself in this position end up with 15 Wendy's franchises?
We're growing. I think we're almost up to 18 now.
18, yeah. Okay. I didn't want to cut you short.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, my wife's comes from a, you know, a quick serve background. Her family owns some Tim Hortons. And,
okay.
So she went to business school with me as well. And, you know, bright mind and always looking to grow herself as well. And, you know, family friend is heavily involved at Wendy's at a high level. And after I sold Staffleets, had some capital and, you know, she was looking for that next thing to do in her life as well. And we had bought a Freshie franchisee, our franchise, and had one of those, enjoyed it, and thought it was good. Had an opportunity to acquire, I believe it was for at first 12 Wendy's existing locations, restaurants. And, you know, just kind of ran the numbers and took a look at the investment opportunity. And then we were looking to make some investments. And again, she's got a background in the industry. So it's kind of her thing. I you know, assist and help her quantitatively where I can, but it's been a great investment, and it's really enjoyable as a family to be a part of that.
Where are they mostly?
Yeah, they're located from about Fort Erie to Oakville, so kind of southern Ontario area where I grew up.
So is she up there mainly? How do you guys commute?
Yeah, we have an interesting dynamic there. No, she's with me quite a bit, but I mean, she's there a lot as well. And we got an eight-month-old daughter now, and that makes things even more complex. But no, I mean, the amount of respect I have for her and what she does on a day-to-day basis, being a mother with a husband who's a general manager, who's got his own demands, and then running, you know, a multi-million dollar business, it's impressive.
How did you two meet?
We met first day of school. Yeah, first day calculus class, actually. 8 a.m. four days a week. It was a grind, so I guess we connected just to try to get through it first. But no, very first day of classes, so a lot of fun.
How old were you?
I was 20 years old.
So yeah. First day of college.
Yeah, college, yeah.
Is she a hockey girl? Did she play hockey? Did she grow up watching?
You know, she enjoys the game. I mean, she's a Timmins girl, so not much else to do in Timmins but watch some hockey, I guess.
Okay.
But no, not a huge fan. I mean, she enjoys it, but not she doesn't know what I'm talking about half the time, to be honest.
I mean, obviously you make it work, but is that in some ways a good thing? And that
it's a good balance. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, we enjoy a lot of different interests, and I try to be well-rounded in life. I think that's important. I think it's good for your mental well-being. It's good for balance in life. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm a hockey nut at heart too, and I get my work in, but I think it's good to kind of get away at times and look at it from different angles and different industries. And yeah, you know, I spend a lot of time with different sports and different industries to you know, keep my mind sharp and keep my mind thinking about new ways to get better at my everyday job. So, but yeah, to have her to, you know, talk about different things and talk about our businesses and life, it's a good balance.
What's the biggest challenge for you with Arizona and with the Coyotes right now?
No, I think it's like any, you know, challenge in a startup business. I mean, we kind of view it, Aaron Cohen's our CEO there, myself, you know, we're building a business. And
you feel in some ways it's a startup still?
Yeah, I do. You know, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a real positive way, in the sense that there's a lot of opportunity for growth. And, you know, instead of having to be at a point where you've got to, you know, transition and turn things around and change a lot, you know, some of the infrastructure was lacking, and that allowed us for an opportunity to grow. So, yeah, just you know, it takes time, and it's a process to go about building out departments and building out best practices and hiring the right people. I mean, that's the biggest part of my job, and I've had the, you know, ability now through Staffleets, through Wendy's, you know, now through the Coyotes. I mean, to hire a lot of people, and it's difficult, and it takes a lot of strategy. It takes a lot of thoughtfulness to go through that. And, you know, that's something that we spend a lot of time on, and it takes time. But when you hire the right people, it and you compound it by hiring more of the right people, I think that's when special things happen. So, look, I think we're on the right track. We've done a lot of good things. You know, the team's got a great team today. It's got an even better pipeline coming. And, you know, we want to build something sustainable for the long run. And it's been a challenge, but my experience is that anything that is a challenge is worth it in life.
Who have you maybe connected with in other sports where you feel like you can learn from them? Is it maybe local? Is it Arizona, you know, the Cardinals, or is it in Arizona, or is it back home?
Yeah, a few different people. I mean, in sport, I'd say, you know, the Diamondbacks, I probably spend so much time around those guys that they want to throw me out now.
Oh, really? But
no, they're awesome. They're super welcoming and, you know, really, really interesting guys. The majority of them started out with Epstein in Boston with the Red Sox, and then a few of them went to Chicago as well and won that World Series. Now they're out in Arizona with the D-backs. So, you know, similar age, you know, similar mindset, been through that process of evolving from some traditional methods to where they are now, which is, you know, highly quantitative, highly specific, highly business-driven. So I spent a lot of time around with those guys and pick their brains, and we share ideas, and they'll talk about best practices. So a lot there. And then Rob Goldstein's the COO of BlackRock, and he developed a system there called Aladdin, and it's their quantitative, you know, investment side of their firm. And just the work he's done in the investment side on Wall Street, it's pretty incredible. Again, the guy, I think he was 35 when he was named COO of BlackRock, and the amount of capital that they oversee and what he's been able to accomplish at a young age. Inspiring guy, a brilliant mind, and again, one of these guys who's very quantitative in nature, but also very practical and logical in his reasoning. So I really enjoyed him as well.
Now, is that in my backyard in Greenwich?
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I've been hearing about them forever.
Yeah.
What is it that they specifically do that interests you in the sports arena?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting questions I get a lot about sports analytics or hockey analytics is, like, it's a super complex sport. It's a lot of dynamics, a lot of moving people, all these different things, and there's challenges to trying to quantify the sport and understand it in the deeper level, without a doubt. But, you know, just going through, I mean, he's trying to understand human behavior, and he's trying to understand human patterns and how people make the decisions they make. And then from those takeaways, you know, he's able to make investments that, I think last year they made about $3 trillion off of his platform. So, you know, I think the complex things that they're trying to solve are probably more complex or just as complex as trying to solve hockey. And just to understand, again, their process and how they find value. And a lot of times it's on the margins, and it's a long tail, and it's areas where people are tending to overlook, and he creates a lot of value in that way. So, you know, one of the things he told me that's, you know, kind of scary, but I'll share is that, you know, your credit card history is probably a better indicator and a better predictor of, you know, your life, when you're going to have expected mortality, than going to get a physical from a doctor. So
expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my baby, but, you know, just understanding, you know, from insurance purposes, you know, if your credit card data, it's got everything, it knows everything about you. So they're able to correlate that with, you know, when you're going to die a lot more accurately than if you went in to a doctor who takes, you know, your blood pressure and, you know, all your vitals and all these things. They won't know as much as you can know from your own credit card history. So, you know, it's stuff like that, again, you wouldn't necessarily intuitively think, but it's pretty amazing that they can do that type of stuff now with data.
Are you more cautious or think about a little bit every time you swipe your credit card now that this is some kind of indicator?
Yeah, I'm lucky to live in Arizona. Lifestyle is phenomenal. So I hit a lot of health and wellness spots. So I'm not too worried about that. But it is incredible. Like, you know, and then some of the stuff they've been able to do from a business side. Like I said, I mean, you don't make $3 trillion a year by accident, and it's pretty amazing.
The other young GM in the league, Kyle Dubas, I see both of you as having some similarities, but you do both carry yourself with a quiet confidence it just happens to be your personality. Perhaps you're not the, you know, boldest or brashest. You know, it's funny, like I saw Brian Burke run through the other day, and he, you know, if you have an internal scoreboard or an outside scoreboard, I sometimes look at people, he, you know, he's a little more out there.
Yeah.
Do you see some similarities in yourself with Kyle? Are you as confident on the inside, or you just carry yourself a little more quietly?
Look, I don't know. I think there's times to, you know, lead you know, be vocal and assert yourself in a situation. I think, like I said, I really enjoy listening. I enjoy, you know, learning about people and asking in-depth questions. And that's just my approach to life, I guess. But no, I mean, in general, a lot of respect for Kyle and what he's been able to accomplish. And I mean, we got certain challenges in Arizona, and he's got certain challenges in Toronto. And, I can only imagine, you know, being involved in his market and dealing with the media on a day-to-day basis and, you know, the things that he's done, and he's done it with grace, and he's done it and executed it on a, you know, very clear plan and been a part of that from the day one, basically. I think that gets overlooked at times, too. I mean, he was a big part of the, you know, the draft, develop model, and done a lot of good things there. So, you know, anytime you get someone, you know, that's blazing a trail in a market like that, you got to give credit where it's due. And my experience with Kyle in our discussions or you know, in a group setting is that he adds a lot of value. And if there's an opportunity for him to add value, he will. And I respect that.
A lot of the new data that the NHL is going to put on the air next year.
Yeah.
Are you a big proponent of that? What do you think of it? You think that to engage millennials or your generation, even the next generation, that it's the way to go?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think, again, you've seen this with some of the other sports and how much value it creates. I think people aren't passive viewers any longer. They're active and they want to be engaged. And if they're not, then they're sitting at home, they're on their phone, they're doing other things. So I think people, you know, it's an information age for a reason. Technology's evolved. I think the sport's evolving with it. And I think the NHL has done a great job in terms of taking their time with the technology, because it is a very complex sport in terms of data collection and how you go about doing it. And it's not just, you know, cameras in an arena. There's a lot more nuance to it. And again, coming from that industry, I respect or I understand that. So I love the technology they've developed. I think the information that's going to come from it is fascinating. I think it's great for viewers. I think it's great for teams. I think you're going to see a lot of value in terms of performance based off of that information. But again, I've seen what they're doing with some things in basketball because they've had this data for a number of years. And I think it's incredible from a fan experience standpoint that the amount of information and types of information that fans can get from it. So whether it's from the fans, the team's perspective, I think for players, coaches, you know, across the board, all stakeholders, it's a slam dunk.
I always am so interested in how long a guy's been out there, you know, like the shift length. And you often, you'll hear the analysts say, oh, I think he's been out there for almost the whole power play. But wouldn't it be great to know? It seems like they've been in the offensive zone for a minute and a half, and it would just be great to know.
Yeah. There's a lot of key information and key takeaways from the information. I think what's really interesting is you have that kind of observation more from a casual fan perspective than I probably have, you know, a performance team that wants to know from a physiological standpoint, what does that mean? How do they perform? What's the impact the next day? All those types of things where when you have, you know, contextualized information, it can add a lot of value for again, the fans, the players, the staff. I think everyone's, you know, really looking forward to having all that information. And it tells a story as you're watching the game, as you're saying. So
I'm going to guess that if you're out there a minute and a half, you might, you know, you're probably going to get scored on.
Not only that, but you're probably not feeling too good the next day either.
And or the next shift, or the lactic acid builds up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. The sport itself is really phenomenal in terms of the impact on the body. And I think there's a lot to be learned from that and gleaned from that. And like I said, I think that's good for the players. I think it's good for the fans. I think it's good for us as evaluators. And it's going to be an interesting time as that all comes in.
Millennials always get this, that they move around a lot. They only have a job for 5 minutes. Do you see yourself doing this a long time, or do you think that millennials get a bad rap that they move around a lot in terms of jobs?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. You know, I think a lot of the friends that I have you know, pretty solid jobs, and they also they seek out companies that are provide a lot of value for their lives, whether it's flexibility, whether it's you know, a workplace environment that's really healthy and balanced. And you know, that's things that we brought to our organization as well. I think, you know, we hire specific people, very motivated, very driven. A lot of them are type A personalities. You know, I think the mental health component and integration with your job is so important. And so I think a lot of the people that I have interacted with or I'm friendly with, they really seek out those environments. And, you know, I think that's something in sports we can continue to provide, whether it's for our players or our staff. And, you know, so I think that's an interesting dynamic and an evolution of, you know, millennials seeking out that next big thing. On a personal level, you know, I've always been of the mindset of just, you know, very focused on what I've got in front of me. And, you know, my advice to others, and I obviously have to live by it, is just to dominate what you do every day. And, you know, if you can do that, then other opportunities that rise or exist or whatever your goals are, short-term and long-term, you know, those are things that you'll be able to accomplish and understand, but or realize. But for me, I've never had a 5-year, 10-year plan. I mean, I don't know where the industry is going or what other industries are going to exist. And so, you know, I don't look too far ahead. You know, we got 16 games left of the Coyotes right now, and that's what my focus is.
Well, the sky is the limit for you, and we're really looking forward to watching Arizona continue to grow. So thank you so much for doing this. We'll do it again.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was enjoyable.
What a great addition to the NHL John Chayka has already been. He talks about being in a room with smart people, high intellect. Well, that's how you feel when you talk to him. He's very engaging, and clearly Arizona is in very good hands. Don't forget, you can always download the NHL Executive Suite on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to drop us a review. We always appreciate hearing from you. So until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.